This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello, this is Julia Zamiro, and you're listening to Joy 94.9. Lucky you.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That, Joy 94.9. With a, I'm not a well person. I've got all this, I'm Wheezy Anna. You can call me Anna. Okay, Gordon, please call me Anna.
Hello, Anna.
And Phil, you can call me Anna as
I'll
well.
I'll call you Mississippi.
Why?
I don't know. You don't look like an Anna.
I am. I'm here to tell you. Welcome to Been There, Done That. Yes, it's Joy's history program. Sometimes we have talk about gay icons, bicons and dicons and other important things in the histories. But then there's events that happen around us that are historical or hysterical. And we sometimes wonder what their origins might be. So on today's show with us, we'll be talking about Labor Day. We'll be talking about an anniversary that's occurring on the 18th of March. A very important person for our community. We'll be talking about biodiversity, and we'll be talking about something that's going to be personally happening to one of this crew in the next few weeks. So there we go. That's the rundown of the show. We had a holiday weekend, a stretched weekend.
Labor Day.
Why, Gordon, please?
Labor Day. Labor Day was the celebration of the eight-hour day, which came into effect way back in 1856 when the Masons of Victoria decided they would stop building Parliament House and a couple of other places until they got 8 hours of work, 8 hours of play, and 8 hours of sleep.
They got a bit stroppy, didn't they?
They did get very stroppy, but that's the way we got Labor Day.
I mean, they're workers. They've got to work 7 days a week, surely.
Oh, they were working 7 days a week, but now they got that down to 6 days a week.
All right. Yeah, so the working week was 6 days.
Yes, but they could go to church on Sundays, you see, so that was one of the reasons.
Oh, yes.
Yes. But Labor Day was instigated then, and it wasn't until then. It was a bit later when they put in Labor Day to celebrate it and have a public holiday. And we had a public holiday for years called Labor Day until 1954. When they had a little parade going down Swanston Street, which developed into something rather large.
Well, I believe that before 1954, there were parades as well, but they were just trade union
They
type
were the
parades.
Union, trade union. They would march down Swanston Street with their big banners, with their beautiful banners. Those banners are absolutely fabulous, and they're still, some of them are still up at Trades Hall.
Much like church banners.
Yes,
though,
a bit like that,
for patron saints. Oh,
they'd be, you know, in the old measurement, 12 feet wide and 6 feet high, and been carried by two burly blokes against the wind or something or other.
And where would they march from?
They marched from the top of Swanston Street right down Swanston Street.
Now, what building is up there that we might see
close
these days?
Near the Trades Hall. They'd start at the Trades Hall and they'd come back down to there.
That's a lovely stone building with columns in the front, corner of Victoria Parade and
Lygon Street.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I believe that you might have had a job in that general vicinity.
I worked for years at the John Curtin Hotel, right opposite, which was the Trade Union Hotel.
You're a tradie going
You had to be in the trade union to work at that place, I can tell you. You had no option. I didn't worry because I've always been a unionist man anyhow.
And Phil, have you always had the opportunity of joining a union in any of your jobs?
Not once. Typically working in smaller companies and in the IT business, which is very, well, I'll say immature. It's not a very old industry.
But that would be a pretty fluid industry anyhow, wouldn't it? People would be coming and going and you wouldn't...
Yeah, and there's a lot of money and a lot of wages were fairly high. So in that sense, we didn't need the union to fight for our conditions. although as an apprentice, my first week's pay was $35, which was a lot of money, actually.
That was a lot of money in those days. Yeah.
Well, my first job was a government job. No, it wasn't. It was working for Myers in the bargain basement.
Oh, you were a Myers maid.
I was, yes. Oh. This was my Christmas wages, and it started me on the savings program that I put into practice.
So you were in the basement of Meyer in Adelaide.
Basement, exactly.
There, down in Adelaide.
Yes.
Yeah, I fell down the stairs going down to that thing.
Oh.
I got off the ship coming over, and our first port of call was Adelaide. And I got off there, and I was waiting for the roll of the ship before I stepped off down the stairs.
Your sea
it
legs.
Didn't roll, and my feet went...
What do they do with the drunken sailor?
Well, that's right.
Send him into Myers.
Send him into Myers, yeah.
Well, I was ragged when I was a little apprentice person, first job. I was told by one of the other floor walkers in...
Are you free?
Well, not quite. It was suggested that I should go over to the paint department and buy a can of striped paint.
Oh, right, yes.
And I started walking there, and I turned around on my heels and said... Don't be stupid. I see what you're doing to me. You're tricking me.
That sounds like my left-handed screwdriver.
Yeah. Oh.
There's always one of them in the toolkit.
Yeah.
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 Until second year of apprenticeship, and then you did it to the first years.
Yeah.
Those traditions
carry. So what happened at 1954?
Well, they decided they would have a parade to celebrate.
Parade needed to morph.
Yeah, well, it became a full... blown community thing rather than the unions, and they called it Mumba. It was supposed to be an Aboriginal word and meaning something or other. But
let's get together and have fun which yeah, it never
it,
meant that.
But it never meant that at all. It meant kiss me bum in the local dialect.
So it was an advertising gimmick.
Yes, this is right. And it fell flat because they got somebody to ask them what they would call it. Some of the Indigenous community at the time said Mumba, which means kiss me bum. So that's what it's been called ever since.
Well, it was an honest opinion.
That's right.
But I can remember seeing an advert for that on the Perth Railway Station in 1954 before I came over here.
Yeah.
And it was advertising this wonderful, wonderful parade called Mumba in Melbourne in 1954. But, so they were advertising it all around Australia for the first one. Yeah.
It's Australia's largest free community festival with millions of people attending every year, and that's over the 3 weeks that sort of events are structured.
Yeah, yeah. But it was basically the parade, which started right up the top near the brewery, the old brewery site up in the top in Swanston Street.
And
it went right down to Linlithgow Avenue and would turn left into Linlithgow Avenue. And the people would tend deep along the streets of Swanson
heavens,
Street.
Why? The person underneath must have been squashed if they're 10 deep.
Yeah, but it was.
You'd think that was one of my lines, wouldn't you?
You would, but it was just an amazing spectacle because when I first came over here in 1958, we lived in St Kilda Road, so we just only had to walk across the road to see the parade. So,
good. But now with the special tram stops in Swanston Street, you can't get a good rundown.
Well, they don't do it anymore down Swanston Street.
And of course, with all the building works with the Melbourne Metro, lots of St Kilda Road is being dug up. So,
this year they started down to the Shrine end of the St Kilda Road and came back up towards the river, I think. But the other thing about the Mumba was the water skiing on the Yarra River. That took off and became very, very popular.
And
the Birdman and all the rest of it made a lot of fun.
Of course, this weekend there was the usual catastrophes of people falling into the water and ingesting all that poisonous muck.
Oh, God, I wouldn't want to swim in the Yarra. Wouldn't matter what happened.
No. But the parade now has become rather community...
More community oriented. There's no floats anymore. They had these wonderful floats like Meyer and the Gas and Fuel Corporation.
Well, they do have some floats, but not the big corporate things.
Not the big corporate things,
So it's a parade for the plebs.
Mm, yeah.
There'll be a man on stilts. Every year he's there. Don't know how he gets home.
He would have to be careful that he didn't bump into the tram wires, wouldn't he?
Well, that's the way. When they made the floats going down Swanston Street, they had to be made to a certain height so they would get under the tram wires. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was all very well.
It'd be much more colourful if they didn't. You have all these sparks and smoke. Much more fun.
We've got the Bee Gees lined up. They're going to be talking about night fever. Bee Gees, please explain.
They are the brothers Gibb, who came out here on a boat.
That's
they did
right.
that they these were, days, would, they'd be sent home.
They were 10-pound bombs.
Well, there were 30 pounds of three of them.
Well, oh, there you go then.
Buy your Gibbs in bulk.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Bee Gees, Night Fever.
Find out more about Joy 94.9. Check out joy.org.au.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Labor Day, yes. Oh, it was nice having the Monday off, but I did feel guilty, didn't I?
Did you?
Oh, having been a sort of a member of a union, I was just finishing my little story off. Apart from working at Myers, I then became a public servant, and there were unions with that applied and looked after public servants. Mm. And yes, they did a bit of good for me as well. But it's very interesting how general society has moved away.
Yeah, well, it was the government that brought in all the laws that basically decimated the union movement. But you've got to remember that without the union movement, we wouldn't have had a Labor Day holiday. You wouldn't have had a lot of the holidays we get.
Well,
because they were all fought for. You know,
that's right. And we wouldn't have had regular wage rates.
That's right. We wouldn't
and
get.
We wouldn't have had holiday loadings.
That's right.
Or even annual leave.
That's right.
These sorts of things. Now, in the deregulated labour market that we've got at the moment in 2019, a lot of those aspects have gone out the window.
Well, that's the problem at the moment. And of course, the coming election is supposed to be going to be written done on wage rates or something or other.
Well, we've had so many years of the capitalists turning back the clock, mm-hmm. undoing all those hard fought for benefits, that it's about time that the worm turned.
Well, the clock usually goes around. You know, what goes around comes around, you know, and it'll finish up that we'll be, depending on who becomes the government, what the yeah. Thing will be.
Yeah. And it's interesting that way back in, let's see, what's the date? On the 14th of March, the year 2008, a bill was passed in Victoria allowing registration of partnerships. Now, that's 11 years ago, and in that intervening year, the years, things have happened. We weren't satisfied with the small step that was achieved at that point, but we've built on that now. And a couple of years ago, we got marriage equality which is a national implementation of what the state had implemented. But there was a few embarrassing slips between cup and lip to get equality for gay couples or straight couples who were, up to that stage, living in sin.
That's right.
And who had no legal rights, yeah, inter alia, between those two parties, because they didn't have that little piece of paper which said, you are married.
No, but that's what the partnership registration did. It was not only for our community to register your relationship, but it was also for, as you say, de facto couples that could register their relationships as well.
It's a horrible word, though, registration.
Oh, yeah.
You get your dog registered, not your partner.
Yeah.
Mm. That's just, it was insensitive at least.
It was a strange bill because you had to be able to prove that you were financially responsible for your partner and they were relying on you to be You were supporting them and all the rest of it. But it did give you, if you were a gay couple, if you registered your partnership, if anything happened and you got sick, your partner could then come in and override anybody else's opinions about what the medical situation would be. So that was one of the good things that happened.
Yeah.
Because it was, up until then, it was only the next of kin that could actually do anything, like your mother or your father or your sister, if you didn't have your parents alive or something or other. But it was just one of those things. But the registration made that possible for your partner to sort of say what was going to happen.
One small step for man.
And then it took another, what was that, 2008, 2007, up to...
Well,
up to 2018.
It probably took 8 or 9 years for it to work its way through the...
But we've still got a couple of fights to go yet.
Oh, we certainly
have. We still have a few to go yet.
There's another little person who's had a birthday round about the same time. 18th of March 1939 was born a Michael Kirby, who became an Australian High Court judge, and he is one of us.
Oh, of course he is.
And he has fought for equality in the law in lots of areas, and he is a voice which... It's just magnificent to listen to him, to hear him clearly define his logic path, and there's no hint of bias in that.
He was one of the few liberal members of the Australian High Court.
Yeah.
The others were all quite conservative, which is similar to you've got they're appointed. So if you've got a conservative government in and somebody has to retire, they would probably employ a conservative.
Their political appointment.
Yeah, their political appointment. So they would get a conservative judge in
like
on the thing.
Much like the board of the ABC. The party in power has got its hands on quite a few of the levers.
Yeah.
But he was, Michael Kirby, when he was on the High Court, was a fairly independent thinking person, and he clearly defined his arguments nicely.
I think our High Court has an age limit where you can serve. It's not like the Supreme Court in America where you die in office. You do not retire from being a Supreme Court judge. You actually pass away, or you can retire if you want to. But in Australia,
you get trumped over there, don't you?
Sorry.
Yeah, but it's amazing, because I was watching the thing about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's the Supreme Court judge, the elderly woman.
She
and Michael Kirby almost share the same birth date. It's amazing that these two justices on the highest courts of their land.
Well, not only has Michael Kirby got this birthday, but on the February the 11th, 1969, Michael Kirby met Johan van Vlotten in Sydney.
At the Rex Hotel.
Yes.
Did you ever go to the Rex Hotel?
I did.
You did too.
Well, it was a well-known gay watering hole.
That's right.
It was interesting that they have just celebrated their 50th anniversary of their first meeting.
Yes.
And they celebrated. How did they celebrate it?
Really wonderful. They got married.
They did. They took advantage of the same-sex marriage vote that went through the House, and they have benefited thereby.
Yeah, but the thing was that Michael Kirby didn't like the yes vote being the postal vote for the yes vote. He was totally against it until his partner, Johan, convinced him that it would be a good idea to do so, to take part in the vote.
I didn't like the... The implementation of it.
I thought it was absolutely wrong. It was a waste of bloody money. You pay these politicians to make decisions and to pass the buck to make sure that they didn't say anything. We had to vote for it. But the vote was absolutely an amazing result.
Really. Look how much has changed in the world since Mr. Kirby met his partner in 1969.
Yeah.
We had man land on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the world now. With same-sex marriage or marriage equality, we think you're going back to the moon.
Yes, yes.
A lot of progress on that side.
A lot of side, yeah.
But it's almost a completely different world that we live in.
Well, we do.
So to be born into this world and to grow up gay, hopefully, will be so much safer and better.
Philip, it's going to take at least probably a generation and perhaps two generations.
Well, a lot of dinosaurs need to die.
That's right, yeah, before the whole thing comes to pass.
Michael Kirby said that the pair had met at the Rex Hotel, as you mentioned, good, mm-hmm. one of Sydney's few gay venues in 1969. He came in at about 9:15, and the relationship that was made that night lasted from that moment on, really, and is still going strong. And the celebrant Michelle Bailey is quoted as telling the wedding guests that within weeks of the fateful meeting, the pair had been introduced to and accepted by their respective families.
She's amazing because she worked at the Kirby Institute, and she said to Michael, she said, if ever you want to get married, consider me to be the celebrant. And so he did. When they decided to get married at Bondi Junction, they would have this woman who had worked with him at the Kirby Institute as the celebrant. Yeah.
But once again, Michael Kirby has quoted his interpretation of the social situation. The couple didn't feel a special need to secure a document from the government to celebrate their 50 years together. Shared love doesn't seek permission from officials for its existence. At this stage, they didn't feel that they had anything to prove about their love because they'd been together for 50 years and were still together. Their marriage was proof positive of the capacity of love to prevail over obstacles, hostility, change, and the passing of time.
As a judge, you should have pointed out that you get less for murder.
He didn't think that you should be able, you should have to get married, but I can always remember there was a couple of elderly women on the thing, and they said, we've been together for 40 years, who needs it, you know?
Yeah,
that's the point, though. We just want the right to get married.
That's right.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's not compulsory.
It's not compulsory. It's just the right to say, I want to marry my partner of so many years, you know. It's just a wonderful thing to be able to do, yeah.
So my future business is going to be tattoo removal, because that's going to be highly sought after.
It is, and
gay divorce.
They had that. I heard an article about that on the radio, and that's what's coming.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Future proof.
Stay with us because there's more coming up after we've heard from Earth, Wind and Fire.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Turn us on anywhere.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us and thanks for your feedback.
We've got an interesting article to be talking about at the moment because it was in 1971 that a little sort of furry animal was made our Victorian emblem. Yeah,
right. And what was this little creature called?
The Leadbeater's Possum.
Now, do you think he would have gotten that job if not for Dame Edna?
Probably not, calling everybody possum. Said,
possums were front of mind every time Dame Edna came on stage.
Hello, possums.
Yeah. Leadbeater's possums are only found in Victoria, so that's why
in the eastern forests.
In the forests of the east, yes, that's right. But the problem is that there is so much of the forests have been cut down these days that the leadbeater's possum is hunted a little bit out of existence because it doesn't have its natural habitat. It's being taken away.
No, well, that's the greed of the timber industry or the dependence upon our natural resources, but I don't know whether we have any real rights to claim nature purely for our benefits.
I don't think so, but there's been a few very interesting articles that I've been reading about the biodiversity of Australia, you know, and there's one big thing that's been coming in. It's about the fact that if we keep cutting down all these trees, we won't have It upsets our water catchments, the catchment areas, and when new trees start to grow, they use a lot of water to grow, and a lot of water doesn't go into the dams, so that this is, makes our water supply very, very dicey if they keep cutting down all the trees around the natural catchment areas for the rain.
Yeah, and the rainwater needs to filter into the soil slowly and deeply to allow the forests to regenerate. And, of course, as you were saying, they don't regenerate.
It's not a new problem. There's a piece of graffiti at Burnley Station.
Been there for years.
Stop logging our catchment areas. And it's been there as long as I can remember.
That's probably right too. Yeah. But it was an interesting article. But there was a rebuttal of that in the paper the other day, which sort of said, "Oh no, that's totally and utterly wrong. It doesn't. They don't need this sort of water to grow these young trees and everything. But they do." Yeah.
Well, can I give you an European situation? As a result of World War II, there was lots of areas in those middle European countries that had all their forests trashed by war efforts, because the troops could hide in there, the tanks and things could hide in there, bombs were indiscriminate, and lots of things. What the Europeans determined when peace came was that those forests needed to be replanted, but they planted them in a single type of tree.
Oh, not a diversified forest.
Exactly. Mm. And they, after the trees grew, they realised that there was no boids in there singing, there was no deers running around, there was no proper critters in the creeks, etc., etc.
Mm.
And then they had to go in and start to create diversity by replanting manually a lot of the trees cover that would have been planted by just scattering seeds.
Well, they probably were the trees that should have been there in the first place.
Precisely.
You know, so they didn't replace the trees that were originally there, but something was going to grow quickly or something rather.
Yeah, and the monoculture doesn't work.
No, but it's the same.
Simplistic answer, though.
Yeah.
So what do we do? Oh, we better plant more.
Yeah, but that's the same now. They've been planting pine trees.
Yeah,
to cut down here in Victoria, you know.
And blue gums.
Yeah, but they don't, the gum trees, the pine trees don't get holes in them where the birds can make nests and things like that. This is the problem. They don't do that. But they're planted for timber, for housing framing and all this sort of business.
And they're not fireproof, because if a fire goes through those pine plantations, that's it.
All the oil that just in the plant themselves, they just explode.
And they don't survive a fire.
No.
So therefore, they've got to cut things down. They've haven't left any seeds behind. And it's going to be hard work for it to regenerate in that form. So that's when they have to consider putting in diversity.
But at the moment, they're starting to cut down some of the magnificent mountain ash trees that are out in the mountains of the east of this state. And mountain ash trees are just absolutely beautiful, beautiful big trees, and they're just gorgeous. But they're the home to all the animals and the birds and everything. But that doesn't matter, you know.
And
there's money to be made.
You mentioned that there's various pieces of fauna that didn't come back into the forest. But what would you call a deer with no eyes?
I don't know.
No idea.
Oh, no idea.
Oh, thank you very much, Phil. Yes.
We might change the subject now.
All right then. Okay. Well, what I could suggest is, though, that we've been warned that the insect kingdoms are being chewed out.
Of course,
they're
not
regenerating.
This is, of course, some of these trees being cut down and everything, because that's where they live and they nest and all this sort of business. But
we need bees and moths and other things to fertilise the flowers of those trees.
I suspect they're falling victim of an insecticide.
Well,
they're being killed en masse. People shouldn't be putting these chemicals in their gardens to just universally kill every Tom, Dick and Harry that comes by, because we're the top of the tree.
Mm.
And the only reason we can survive is to let everybody underneath us get by too.
Mm, that's right.
But we don't like the little wriggly things or the stingy things.
Well, starting last weekend, I think it is, I'm not sure when exactly the date is, they're going to have the duck shooting season start. You know, they're going to get out and shoot all the ducks, but there's very few ducks around because there's no water.
And the other thing is, of course, that all the lead shot that gets fired in the air falls down. Where does it go? Goes into the water, and then it melts into the water and into the soil and poisons.
But you've got to be careful.
I'm not sure that there's lead in the lead shot these days.
I'd hope not.
I don't think there's lead in it.
But you watch, one day you're going to get mugged by a duck, and you're really going to think, well, why don't we have duck shooting?
One of the letters to the paper recently said, I wonder if how they'd go if the ducks had guns and fired back.
Yeah.
That's equality. Well, I believe in that.
Yeah.
I think I've seen enough summers, and as you, Gordon, and you, Philip, that we can remember when summertime would mean that you would have blowflies.
I haven't seen a blowfly in years, have you?
No. That we would have those little bush flies, I call them the little ones that created the need for you to wave your hands in front of your mouth before you opened it to start speaking, or else these little baskets would go into your mouth.
Philip, I'm here to tell you that's not a wave, that's the Australian salute.
Yes,
and that was Chris talking.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Chris talking. Yeah, well, that's the Australian salute. But I've noticed that a couple of times I've been standing on the station waiting for a train, and the flies have come around, just a couple of little buzzes, you know, and they go very quickly.
There's nothing to worry about. No. And people freak out if they can hear one mosquito and they think they're going to be attacked and carried away or end up with dengue fever or something.
Yeah, well, you can.
Same with cockroaches.
Oh, God.
Summertime. That's when they happen. Well, and they're not dirty unless you leave dirty things around for them to eat.
Yeah, but they said that if they destroyed the earth with an atom bomb, the cockroaches would still survive.
But who would they scare?
There'd be nobody here to... Well, you'd look at them and you'd think, oh, poor little thing, you know.
If you're scared of a cockroach in Australia, go to Hawaii.
Oh, right, they're big ones,
aren't they? They're the size of small cats.
I don't like that.
You're on Joy 94.9, Been There, Done That with Gordon, Phil and Chris.
Stay tuned, there's more.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're with Been There, Done That, Joy 94.9. Chris, Gordon and Phil.
That's me.
Oh, yeah, we're still here.
But some people are not going to be here, are they?
Oh, we'll talk about it in a little minute.
Yeah. All right, then. What's a little secret?
I'm just interested in an article that we found about the Malaysian LGBTQ Malaysians fight back after the government official says they don't exist.
What?
I think they're doing a Bob Catter, actually.
Oh, there's no gays in Queensland.
No. Oh. But he had his stepbrother there. Came out and said, yes, I am.
I think there's a degree of denial going on in some of these countries. They just close their eyes and la, 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 and the problem goes away.
But
there is no problem actually to go away, because if they admitted that gay people were a reasonable member of community, then they would actually relish and encourage their acceptance and visibility.
It seems to be in the countries that are basically religious dominated, you know, like
Islam or extreme right.
Yeah, there are two gay world leaders have urged Arab nations to become LGBTQ friendly. They're Xavier Bettel and Leo Varadkar, who have been giving speeches urging Arab nations to become more inclusive of our community. One of them, Bettel, is the Prime Minister of Luxembourg, and he was sort of saying, you know, that you've got to be more friendly to the gay community. But these two men are openly gay themselves, and they went into these Arab meetings and talking about them, saying, you know, you've got to be accepted that this is what people are, because it's part of the United Nations human rights. Yeah, that's what
exactly.
It was.
Exactly. Now, a lot of the people that are not able to come out in Malaysia have made a positive and fruitful life for themselves in other communities.
Yes.
Like in Australia.
Yes.
Or into UK, mm-hmm. where the colonial connections have worked well for them. And so you can have fashion designers, you can have cooks, you can have presenters of one sort or another who are proudly out and gay, but as soon as they step back into Malaysia or Singapore, discrimination barriers come up.
Yes, well, there's been a few people that have sought refuge in Australia that have been gay. And I think there's still a couple of them on Manus Island, actually. They haven't been allowed back into the country.
Yeah.
But I don't know what will happen if there's a couple that get chosen to go and live in America, which hasn't proven very conducive to any of the people that have gone off there from Nauru. They've gone to America and they've had very hard time finding work, doing anything in America. They said they would.
Well, that's part of the capitalist system that's yeah. in but, operation
but,
there.
But they said they'd prefer to be back on Nauru rather than being in America.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm.
Golly, I hadn't heard that
one. I thought America.
They were on the television. I saw it on the telly. Mm.
The old Statue of Liberty. Welcoming all the poor and helpless.
Yeah,
Send me your huddled masses.
Your huddled masses, it was, yes. Free. Yes, that's right. Yes, the
yeah,
word.
Yeah.
I thought it was through rain, hail, sleet, or
no,
snow,
that's
but
the post.
That's the postie.
The postman. Postman Pete, yeah.
Now, one of the other things that has happened, according to some of the press releases I've seen, that some of the Arab states in the Middle East have heard at one of their summits, they've heard about gay life in the friendly countries of the West.
That's right, yeah.
Showing that integration and acceptance is a positive step for governments to embark upon. Mm. And hounding the people and trying to get rid of us is the worst possible thing that they can do for their own consciences.
Well, it's basically against human rights legislation, exactly. Which is in the United Nations, yeah.
But they're doing it in the name of their God, and yet they say their God is peaceful. So it's a bit of a problem there, a bit of a mismatch.
Mm.
Certainly is a mismatch indeed.
It could possibly change slowly because there are quite a few gay Muslims. They have convenience marriages sometimes. You know, they will marry and have a couple of children,
that.
But they have their boyfriends on the side, and that's fine. But been married.
That's part of our society, and we're just further down the road than those societies.
Should we be talking of some new boat people that will be leaving from Melbourne? On a rather large boat.
Oh,
or a ship
you
even.
Mean exporting rather than importing?
Well, just temporarily.
Oh, just really?
That Wilson export program.
Yes, I have to admit that I am leaving on Monday week. Whenever that, on the 18th of March.
Yeah.
I'll say the date because that's about all I can remember. And we're leaving here from Melbourne on the Queen Elizabeth.
All right.
How appropriate.
And where are you going,
please? We're going around the South Island of New Zealand and stopping at Wellington because my partner wants to go and see where they filmed The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And that's one of the day trips we can take. So we've got a book to go onto that one.
Listen carefully because you're going to leave on a ship and you're going to arrive on a ship.
A ship.
So
yeah, a ship.
They mentioned
a ship and a shop.
When the shop arrives.
When the shop arrives in Auckland, in
Stop
Wellington.
It.
Yeah. But it's
That's
yeah, but we have we've been booked into the top class of the ship.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Well, it's taken all your life to get to this particular
Yes,
point.
That's right. Apparently we have a butler.
Oh, wow.
A private butler.
Somebody to crack your pistachios.
Yes. Like
Peel
that.
Me a grape, Bueller.
Yes. Yeah. And they have two gala nights, whatever you want to call it. We have to have dinner suits, so we've got dinner suits.
Yeah, that's good. Or party costumes for the other things.
Oh, well,
so.
I don't think I'm going to get into a party costume. The last time I was on a ship and I won the best dressed competition because I was in drag.
Oh, really?
I don't have a dinner suit, but I'm such a sloppy eater that I come back with dinner all over it.
Yes.
Oh, well, that sounds wonderful, Gordon. So you and your partner are going to go on to the high seas.
Yes.
How long is
it? 12 days.
12 days?
Yes.
Yeah. Golly gosh. Well, that means that we're going to miss you for a couple of weeks on
the
show.
That's right. Yeah.
What will we do without him?
Oh, what will we do?
Well, we'll fill.
Yes. Okay.
There's a lot of things you have to remember to do when you're going away for 12 days. You've got to get somebody to check your mailbox and do all the rest of it. So fortunately, where I live, I've got a couple of decent neighbours that will do it for me. So that's good.
Oh, right, yes. Well, you certainly don't want people to be using your house without your permission.
They'd be hard to get in because the thing is so secure, it's just not funny.
Oh, right, like your virginity.
Yes, that's right, yes. Yeah, that's,
you've got the box that it came in?
Yes,
and that's about all.
That's about all, yeah. But no, I'm quite looking forward to 12 days on the ocean and calling into places that I've never seen and probably won't see again.
Be sure to give us a wave.
But the best part about it is that the Queen Elizabeth is the home port is Melbourne while she's here in Australia. She doesn't go to Sydney.
Yeah.
She calls in there, but she doesn't do anything. She's here at the station.
Get enough pier. Customers out of Melbourne.
Oh yeah, but the people come down from Sydney to Melbourne to go on it, you know. So yeah, and she's going around Tasmania and all those sort of things. You have 4-day cruises and all the rest of it. But we decided on a 12-dayer.
Now, whilst you're gone, I hope you're not embarrassed, but we're going to get someone who might be able to fill your seat, if not your shoes.
I'm sure that Will will fill my feet. Oh, my shoes, I mean, whatever.
Well, Will has a wealth of experience.
Yes. He's a nice man, too.
He is a very nice guy, and he also appears on a couple of shows here on Joy already. But his background is of a technical nature, and young Phil and young Will will have a lot of fun talking about
technology.
Well, aviation in particular.
Yes.
And I challenge you to see if you can find a Frank Sinatra song that might suit.
Oh, up, up and
No, come fly with me.
Come fly with me.
Oh, right. Oh.
I wonder if he's in our system.
1978, I think.
Okay.
Oh, it'd be before that.
Was it?
Surely.
No, I think about 78. It could have been a bit. I know that we bought there's a double album.
Yeah.
Come Fly
but
With Me.
I think we have that piece of music in our personal library, so that's all right. But I was thinking Up, Up and Away.
That's in My Beautiful Balloon.
Yes.
I don't think there's any propellers on balloons.
No, but that was the theme song for an airline company that was functioning here in Australia.
That's right, yes. It was.
Trans-Australia Airlines.
TAA, the friendly way. Well, we know all about that. So that's some of the stuff that will be happening in the next couple of weeks. And then when you return, Gordon, you'll be able to tell us all about your tour.
Oh, God, your trip. Yes.
You'll have an accent by then. You sound like a Kiwi.
What do you do about sex?
Oh.
We dine about sex.
Until about 7.
I hope you don't pick up any diseases on board because the air is recirculated, having been filtered once and cleaned and cooled.
And don't once think about it being a floating gastro factory.
All right, okay, but we have a balcony, huge balcony at the back of the penthouse.
Well, pity the people below.
Yeah, that's right. Below
Say hello to Ralph for me. Ralph.
That's one thing I don't get is seasick, so I'm rather lucky. Yeah,
I don't get seasick because I don't go on boats.
Anyhow, it's going to be lovely. We could time for us to say goodbye anyhow.
It is.
So I'll see you sometime in April or somewhere.
Yes, in the future.
You have a nice holiday, and we look forward to you telling us all about it next time. But until then, it's cheerio. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.